Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. You seen that movie?
I have seen
it. He's in the movie, Joe?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following all 82 Bulls games this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley. And you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Shoot us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text and voicemail line always there for you. Our fellow Bulls fans, 331-979-1369. Send us all of your Bulls thoughts, questions, comments, inquiries. We will get to as much of that content as we can every week in our mailbag episodes. Driving you into your weekend, the Bulls kick off 2020 and a fresh decade of Bulls basketball with a loss at home to the Utah Jazz. That drops the Bulls' home record to 7-12 on the season and their overall record to 13-22. Certainly another disappointing outcome of what looks to be a winnable game. Give credit to the Bulls for hanging with Utah and fighting back in a game when they looked like they may have been outmatched. And, Utah put a nice little run together in the early and middle stages of the second quarter, but the Bulls bounced back from that, and they kept fighting, and they actually came back to take the lead at halftime. And coming on the heels of that game against the Milwaukee Bucks, when it was kind of the similar story, the Bulls played evenly against a good team for the first half. And then you were kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, where, as they have done several times this season, the Bulls just can't quite hang with the solid team in the second half. They either have a poor quarter in the third or the fourth, and they end up losing the game. That's another example. Because to the Bulls' credit, they actually had that nice run bridging the second quarter and third quarter and took an 11-point lead on Utah. Utah calls a timeout when the Bulls stretch that lead to double digits, and after that timeout, Utah took over. And they ended up winning that third quarter 29-19. This is, again, coming on the heels of that Bucks game where the Bucks won the third quarter 40-25. We've seen the fourth quarter be an issue for the Bulls this season. We have seen now several times the third quarter be an issue for the Bulls this season. The adjustments that their opponents are making at halftime, the Bulls are not matching. The opponents usually figure out the best ways to take advantage of this Bulls defensive system. And simultaneously, the Bulls offense just kind of loses its momentum, loses its focus. And it was more of the same in this loss to Utah. The third quarter was obviously the real struggle when Utah made that run and put themselves in solid position. But the Bulls, again, to their credit, fought back again in the fourth quarter. You thought this game was over at some point, and a couple of big shots and a couple of stops, and the game was tied 96-96 on a Zach LaVine three. However, the rest of the story was a very familiar one. I mean, we talked about it a little bit on Outsiders last night. I didn't think the shot that Zach took, that he made that three-pointer from the elbow to tie the game, was that good of a shot. And it came on the end of a very ugly possession where there was a lot of dribbling and not a lot of ball movement and not a lot of player movement, and he was forced to put up a bad shot. He made a bad shot, and that's something that Zach LaVine has showed us that he is capable of doing. So you take it. If it gets you back into a tie late in the game, you take it. It was not a well-executed possession, but you got the points. Credit to Zach for that. On the ensuing possession, after Utah got 2 points on the other end, and there's still well over a minute, I think actually like 2 minutes left to play, Zach chucked up a deep three. A completely unnecessary deep three when you still have at least a few more possessions going back and forth to try to win this game. You're down 2 points. You're not down six. You're down two. And that was the big frustration for myself, and I think for a lot of Bulls fans who continue to live and die by Zach LaVine on this team that's just not very good. And they're not very good closing games. Sometimes Zach Hero Ball pays off, but I would still say confidently right now, more often than not, it doesn't. And that's, yes, a responsibility that falls on Zach. It's also a responsibility that falls on his teammates for not doing enough late in games. And it certainly falls on Jim Boylan for not knowing how to put his players in the best position possible to close out games. The Bulls' offense late in fourth quarters just looks like chaos. Anything that they had been doing up to that point through that game to score points, they just stopped doing. So I did not like the three that Zach took. The second one after he made the one to tie it. And then the other Zach possession down the stretch that kind of, you know, was the nail in the coffin for the Bulls was the one where he drives left and tried to draw contact and draw a foul on Rudy Gobert, the NBA's best rim protector. And there was some contact, but Zach, not so surprisingly, did not get the call. And, you know, the comment that I saw from a lot of Bulls fans on Twitter right after that play, and I completely agree, is that a lot of times when Zach is driving and he's trying to initiate that contact, he's focusing more on trying to get the call than making the basket. Because guess what? If it should have been an and one and you don't get the call, but at least you make the bucket, that's good. That's fine. Hopefully at some point, Zach will start to get some modicum of respect from NBA officials. But until then, I mean, how many times have we seen Zach miss layups? Because it looks to be that he's trying to get a call instead of make the layup. And he had adjusted his shot. It ended up being kind of like a weird, like somewhere between a left-handed layup attempt and a little mini left hook that he just kind of threw up over his shoulder. And not surprisingly, it missed. And he didn't get the call. There's crucial possessions where the Bulls aren't executing and the Bulls' best player can't quite close. Boylan said after the game, look, we put the ball in the hands of our best player, and that's usually your best shot to win games, but Zach doesn't quite have that yet. He's not that talented. He's not that good in those late game crunch time moments. Sometimes he's come through, and I'm not trying to, you know, say that he's trash, but last night between the 3-point, you know, attempt that he took when he didn't need to, and then that drive where it was a makeable shot when he drove on Gobert. He had position to lay that ball in off the glass. He just missed it because he was more concerned about getting the foul call. And I'm sure it's frustrating for Zach that he is not getting these calls and feels like he probably should and he probably deserves them. Especially on your home floor. But the Bulls, as a team that's 13-22, do not have that level of respect from NBA officials yet. And even though Zach is, you know, a 23 points per game scorer and is starting to, you know, carry some level of respect among his, you know, his peers in the NBA, he's still not getting it from the refs, and I think he's hurting himself by trying to draw fouls instead of make baskets. You could do both. But before you worry about getting the foul, worry about putting the ball in the hoop. So that was frustrating to see. And, you know, it was a smaller specific example of a bigger problem with the Bulls this season and a problem with Zach this season. You know, we've talked about how Jim Boylan likes to point out that the Bulls are one of the best teams in the league at the number of looks they get at the rim. I'm not sure if they still are the team leading in field goal attempts at the rim as they were earlier this season, but I know they're still pretty high up there. But conversely, and very is something that's very troublesome, is that they are just like towards the bottom of the barrel in converting on said attempts at the rim. Number of attempts at the rim, Bulls are close to leading the league, but field goal percentage at the rim, they are one of the worst. And that's not all on Zach and this issue that I think he has where he's trying to draw fouls instead of just focusing on making shots at the rim. But how many times did we see Zach before that critical possession late in the fourth quarter last night miss layups? He missed at least four, maybe five layups that I can recall thinking back to the game last night. And if he makes a couple more of those, the Bulls win this game. And again, it's not just him. Kobe White, not great at finishing at the rim so far this season. He has been terrible, but he has been great. Chris Dunn can't finish at the rim. A lot of people. Lauri Markkanen, how many attempts have we seen from him miss at the rim? Wendell Carter Jr. missing at the rim. It's a team-wide problem right now, but it's more glaring for Zach because he's the best player. We look to him to make those buckets, especially in big moments, and last night he missed one. In the biggest moment. And I don't know how that problem gets solved moving forward. And coupling that with the poor decision-making with that long three when you didn't need one, we were reminded once again in another close loss, how many of those have we had to watch this season, that for all of his skills and all of his abilities and all the ways that he can do amazing things on a basketball court, Zach LaVine's late game decision making is still an issue. The other thing I wanted to talk about from that loss to Utah was a couple of noticeable changes in Jim Boylan's rotation. Notably, and again, this is due in part to Chris Dunn once again being a player who gets into foul trouble a little too quickly for a guy at his position. He had four fouls last night in 31 minutes. But when he did get into foul trouble, after, to his credit, having a pretty solid game locking down Donovan Mitchell, who is a very versatile scoring guard, Mitchell finished the night with just 17 points on 6 of 14. Credit to Chris Dunn for a good amount of containing Mitchell. When he got in foul trouble, however, Jim Boylan went with Shaq Harrison in his rotation to try to put on Donovan Mitchell and continue containing him. Shaq struggled at times. There were, you know, one or two blow-bys. But it was interesting to note that Shaq Harrison got back into that rotation ahead of Jim Boylan's son, or teacher's pet, or whatever you want to call him, Ryan Arcidiacono, who was a healthy scratch DNP. I think there is some kind of minor day-to-day thing that the Bulls have listed for Archie right now, but I don't think it would have actually prevented him from playing in last night's game. Shaq jumped Archie in the rotation. And this is, again, you know, a month or so ago before Boylan opted to put Dunn in the starting lineup in the absence of Otto Porter Jr. It was, for a handful of games, Shaq Harrison who he was starting because he likes his length and his defensive versatility. But for some reason, he yanked Shaq Harrison from that starting lineup, replaced him with Chris Dunn, and since then, other than a couple of spot minutes in cleanup duty, we have seen almost no Shaq Harrison. Most of the month of December, we saw no Shaq Harrison. But we did still see Arcidiacono. Almost every single night, we'd see Arcidiacono, whether it was for 8 minutes or whether it was for 18 minutes, we saw Archie. We did not see him last night, which makes you wonder if Jim has been given some instructions from his bosses about his rotation to say, hey, maybe think about doing this instead. Maybe he Jim Boylan, saw Shaq as a better matchup and a longer defender who would be more capable of containing Donovan Mitchell, which would certainly make sense. But remember that this is the same guy who put Ryan, 6'2", Archie Diacono, on Giannis the Greek Freak. Earlier this season, he had Archie guarding Giannis, who is, like, without a doubt, the most athletically freakish and gifted player in the NBA right now. He liked that matchup. And last night, he decides to go with Shaq over Archie when it comes to putting a body on Donovan Mitchell. It makes you think, right? It's curious. Which is why I think it was not a gym thing. I think it's a management thing. Look, they all collectively agreed, Jim Boylan, management, that what Archie Diacono gave them last season in a very rough year, where they were shorthanded a lot, and they were trotting out a lot of G League kind of rosters towards the back half of the season, Archie was a staple. He was always around. He played, I'm pretty sure, led the team in games played. And they rewarded him with a 3-year, $9 million deal, which a lot of people thought was a lot for a player of his caliber. Clearly, Jim Boylan loves him. He loves the grit, the toughness, taking charges, and all that jazz that Archie does. He is the second coming of Kirk Heinrich, and I would say even slightly less talented than Kirk Heinrich. Maybe not slightly. Maybe significantly less talented than Kirk Heinrich, who was, let's remember, a top 10 lottery pick 16 years ago. But for whatever reason last night, there was no Archie in that rotation. Very curious. A couple of other notes on this Bulls bench rotation from last night's game, which, by the way, the Bulls bench got grossly outplayed last night. I believe the final margin in points scored was 36 for the Jazz bench and 23 for the Bulls. Some solid production from the Celtics there. Clarkson led their bench with 12 points. Remember, he recently came over in that trade with Cleveland. He's been pretty solid for them so far. He hit three threes on the night. But so the Bulls bench, I mean, you got five from Thad, five from Gafford, six from Coby White, who had a rough night. He's had a couple of really nice performances recently. I think he had scored 18 or more points in three of his past four games coming into last night's game. He finished last night 3 of 11, including 0 of 4 from downtown for 6 points. Shaq Harrison, 3 points in 11 minutes. And then Denzel Valentine hits a couple of floaters, 2 of 3 for 4 points in 6 minutes. So a couple of interesting things here for the Bulls bench. Thad Young only playing 16. Now, this is a guy who's been complaining about his minutes. When, as that complaint went public, he was averaging around 21 minutes a game. And he thought he was going to be getting closer to 30, even though he was a bench player. There were a couple of games recently after that complaint where Jim did play Thad more. And I don't know if he did a whole heck of a lot more with the minutes he was given. And in the last couple of games of 2019, Thad looked pretty rough. In 16 minutes last night, 5 points on 2 of 5. 4 rebounds. A steal and a block. Kind of underwhelming. And, I mean, at this point, I think the Bulls have to seriously consider trading him. He's probably not happy playing 16 minutes a night. And the Bulls have Lowry that they need to develop. They have Wendell that they need to develop. Lowry got 32 minutes last night. Wendell got 36. Daniel Gafford played 12 minutes last night. I'm not blaming the Bulls for signing Thad. At the time, most everybody thought that he was a solid signing. He was a smart signing, a veteran who's going to come in and try to, you know, establish some semblance of culture and build some kind of veteran leadership on a team that was severely lacking that, especially with the departure of Robin Lopez. Sometimes moves don't work. Even the moves that people think are going to be good moves don't work. So adjust. Unfortunately, with the way he's been playing recently, I feel like Thad's trade value is falling, not rising. But if the Bulls can find a trade for him, I think they have to. Because he didn't give you much in 16 minutes last night. Daniel Gafford gave you more, I think. Just in terms of what he brings energy-wise. And you were playing a team that has Rudy Gobert on it last night, and Wendell, try as he may, is a 6'9", quote-unquote, center. And yeah, Gafford is still pretty raw, but he doesn't give up nearly as much size to a player like Gobert as Wendell does. So, you know, I was frustrated. My buddy Big Dave was going nuts saying, how is it that you're only playing Gafford 12 minutes on a night when you're trying to slow down Rudy Gobert? Doesn't make any sense. The other thing I've heard, and I've heard this from a couple of different sources, is that when it comes to Gafford and the Bulls' decision to play him versus not play him, why he wasn't in the rotation to start the season, and while they're still being very cautious about the minutes they're giving him, is that he doesn't know all the plays yet. Like, he's not quite ready from a I understand the system kind of way. And that's, you know, on the offensive end especially, but also to some degree on the defensive end. Well, that's understandable for a second-round draft pick rookie, but he was at training camp. And the more you give him opportunities to get to know his role in said system on the floor when he's out there, the better he will be. So, look, I know the Bulls aren't throwing in the towel yet. And, you know, after, you know, 2019 came to an end, and looking ahead to, you know, this next phase of the schedule and knowing the January schedule is going to be very tough, Zach LaVine, this team's best player, was talking about, yeah, we've left some winnable games out there that we're disappointed and we're frustrated about not winning, but we're still, you know, we're still not that far out from that eighth seed. Meanwhile, you got Orlando losing one of, if not the best player on that squad, Jonathan Isaac, who's going down for at least 2 months with that injury. The eighth seed looking all the more vulnerable right now. So I get that the Bulls are still trying to make something happen here, but it's going to be very hard with the remaining schedule they have. They took the easy part of their schedule, the front-loaded easy part of their schedule, and did jack shit with it, other than digging themselves a hole. So now it's going to be harder. Personally, I'd be shocked if they're still in the playoff hunt a month from now, a month and a half from now. I think they're going to get buried this month. And if you're getting buried anyway, play Gafford. Trade Thad Young and play Gafford. This kid's got potential. Honestly, there are some nights and some moments in every game that I've seen from him where I think he looks better than Wendell. And that's a scary thought, considering Wendell was a 7th overall pick and is a second-year player. But, yeah, Gafford was a second-round draft pick after playing 2 seasons at Arkansas. People thought he'd be a lottery pick if he went to the draft after his freshman year. And he played a second college year instead. People kind of forgot about him a little bit. Kind of an underwhelming second college season. And it looks like the Bulls may have gotten themselves a steal. And if right now you're saying, man, sometimes in some elements of their game, Gafford looks better than Wendell, not a great thing, certainly a worrisome thing when it comes to what we think Wendell can be in this league. But it also should point to the signs that you should be playing Gafford more. And I didn't think that would be the case. I remember thinking coming into this season that Gafford would be a guy spending a considerable amount of time with the Windy City Bulls in the G League. I thought he was raw. I didn't think he was ready. You coupling that with all of the depth in this Bulls front court, Larry Wendell and the addition of Thad Young, and also at the time the addition of Luke Kornet, who had turned out to be a bust, but it didn't look like there was a place for Gafford. But with all of these factors that we've seen through 35 games or so this season, he looks like he is a factor and should be in that rotation. And I think he should have played more than 12 minutes last night. So we'll see where the Bulls go from here. We are a month and 3 days removed, a month and 4 days, pardon, from the trade deadline. Talk is going to start swirling pretty quickly here in the next week. And We've heard a little bit about Thad Young being a player that other teams are interested in. We've heard that Thad Young might be interested in getting out of here. If the Bulls can find a way to make that happen, and in doing so, free up opportunities, and not just for Gafford playing more minutes, but play Gafford next to Wendell. See if those guys can develop some kind of chemistry. See if Wendell and his desire to be more of a four than a five, which he has said himself, is something that you can, a positive, productive thing to do in the back half of a season that looks like it's not going to go the way you wanted it to. Make use of the back end of a season that is going to ultimately be a disappointment compared to the goals you set for yourself as an organization. Do positive things. Make use of your time. And based on what we saw last night, I think the Bulls have to continue seriously considering making that move. All right, and just one final thought before we get out of here. Wanted to touch on the upcoming Bulls-Celtics matchup we got tomorrow night, Saturday night, another home game for the Bulls, 7 p.m. tip-off Central Time. Boston, another tough one on this very daunting January schedule. Celtics are playing the first front of a back-to-back tonight against the Atlanta Hawks. Should be a fairly easy win for the Celtics. The Hawks are clearly a team that is struggling. But they will be without their star point guard, Kemba Walker, who is officially already out for tonight's game against Atlanta with a stomach illness of some kind. I wonder if something's going around. It seems like certainly it's been going around with the Bulls. Jim Boylan said after the game against Milwaukee where Wendell had to leave very early in the first quarter, that he was dealing with a stomach issue. And we already also knew that Lauri Markkanen had been battling that. So I wonder if something's making its way around NBA locker rooms right now. Certainly seems like it. But all the same, Kemba Walker out tonight versus Atlanta. So we will see if he plays in the second night of this back-to-back that the Celtics have as they come to Chicago tomorrow night. Obviously, not having Kemba would be a leg up for the Bulls in a season where they have caught a lot of those breaks playing against teams missing some or, you know, one or some of their best talents. Kemba is very important to what the Celtics are doing so well this season. They're not a juggernaut offensively. I believe they're 13th in the league in scoring. But he makes a lot of what they do run, and he and Jason Tatum have already developed a pretty solid level of chemistry in Kemba's first season in Boston. The real challenge for the Bulls in this game is going to be getting the ball in the hoop. You know, we're coming on the heels of two games where against Milwaukee and against Utah, the Bulls struggled to score efficiently late in games, in the second half of games, after their opponents make their halftime adjustments. The Celtics are the best defensive team in the league, allowing just 103.6 points per their opponents per game. Also pretty good at limiting their opponents' field goal percentage. They are fifth in the league in opponents' field goal percentage at 43.7. So, the Bulls will have their hands full in this one. Might be getting a little break of luck if they decide to hold Kemba out for the entirety of this back-to-back after they play Atlanta tonight. We will see. But, you know, the Bulls just played a 22-win Utah team and played evenly for a half and actually played evenly for close to most of the game and fell short. They're about to play a 23-win Boston team, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar. But as far as what I would like to see from the Bulls out of this game, you know, obviously, if you can get a respectable win against a team like Boston, that would be fantastic. Even if they don't manage a win, I got to see another strong game out of Lowry. He, you know, he had a decent start to last night's game. He had that awesome dunk where he, like, kind of half posterized Gobert. That's one of the best things we've seen from Lowry all season. But still quiet. Like, he's coming around. He's increasing his field goal percentage. He's increasing his three-point percentage after his dreadful start to the season. We've got to see more. We've got to see more from Lowry, man. And, we've talked about it plenty. It's on him. It's on his teammates. It's on his coach to get him more involved. I think one of the ways that you can continue to do that is to continue to play more of Zach and Lowry in that two-man game. We saw it work a lot last season. We have seen it used less often this season. And I don't know why, and it's kind of frustrating. And hopefully Zach can bounce back and have a more efficient night after he, scored 26 points to lead the Bulls against Utah, but did it not very efficiently, including just 3 of 11 from downtown. With that ill-advised three-point attempt late in the game being one of the more egregious ones. So we'll see. Speaking of that Zach and Lowry two-man game, it was one of the things I mentioned in my column, the pecking order that I dropped on NBCSportsChicago.com earlier today. So if you haven't read that yet, go check it out. I tweeted it out earlier this morning. So you can find the link on my top of my Twitter at Bulls_Peck. So give that a read. Also check out the latest from Casey Johnson, who has a couple of solid posts up on NBCSportsChicago.com today as well. For my co-host, Jordan Malley, who hopefully I will talk to on the mics next week. I know, holiday schedules for both of us were a little crazy. We kind of had to tag team with some solo episodes throughout the week to get you guys the content that we needed to get to you. Hopefully he and I will talk at some point next week. Have a great weekend, Bulls fans. Hopefully we can get ourselves a quality game against Boston Saturday night, and we will talk to you on Monday. Until then, 331-979-1369. Hit us up on that text and voicemail line. We'll talk to you with some more mailbag content next week. See you red. Be good. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com